Greetings, and welcome to another edition of Two Trek Nerds, the podcast that gives you fresh insights while watching one of the best TV shows ever made, Star Trek. My name is Kevin DeBeck.
And I'm Dan Watson.
Just a reminder of what we're doing here is that we're basically doing a rewatch of all the episodes of Star Trek, the original series, and dropping trivia bits and interesting observations by Dan and myself, the aforementioned Two Trek Nerds. Now, for those of you who have been devoted downloaders of our little podcast, I want to thank you for hanging in there, as my family has relocated from Pennsylvania to Maine, and this is the first new podcast in about a month, actually almost 2 months now. We still have way too many boxes to unpack, but we're living on the coast of Maine, and that makes everything better. We're now up to 95 downloads, so thank you all for listening. Dan, how's your life been since we last recorded?
Oh, things are going great, Kevin. How did you like that book that I sent your way, that one about Gene Roddenberry?
Well, first of all, your inscription was highly entertaining, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Number two, I have not had a chance to really dive into it. I read the first few pages, but I remember when that book was published, and it was in the aftermath of Gene Roddenberry's death, and everybody was shocked to learn that while a visionary, he had human foibles.
So, right.
And you know, it's funny how once that furor died down, the love of him didn't really change much.
Yeah,
And so that's the part that kind of still sort of rings true for me, is that, yes, he had troubles. He fooled around on his wives. He did some not so nice things. He kind of screwed some people over, but I don't think he's that different from the era of Hollywood he came from.
Right. Well, yeah. I saw that book and I knew I had to get it to you. So I'm so happy about that. Yeah.
Thank
and then on the personal front, I might say it is, it has to do with, pets with a capital P-E-T-S and a lowercase P-E-T-S.
Right.
A real deep dive. I rescued two classic 50-year-old Commodore pet computers, and I made the mistake of saying one was featured in The Wrath of Khan, and Kevin ever so lightly mentioned, no, it was in the motion picture.
No, you had that reversed.
Classic again I blunder. Yeah, so you didn't call me out on that. That's, you know, you're gonna contact the museum director if you see that type of error. So
well, I must say that worked out. So
yes, yeah. And then and then, as you know, I've rescued a little kitty, so
yes,
1-year-old cat. So it's been cats and cats. And now that those things are well underway, I can get back to podcasting with you. So I'm
excellent.
Ready to go.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And I will say to you all who are listening, I hope you're having a good summer as well. And now that I'm settled, more or less, I'm hoping we can get back to our every other week schedule. So that way we'll start churning these out on a little more regular basis.
Yep, that's for sure.
Yeah. So before we talk about our next episode, I have to catch up on some Trek news. Unfortunately, there is some sad Trek news, as Patty Yasutake, who played Alyssa Ogawa, or Nurse Ogawa, on 16 episodes of Next Generation, and she was in the first two Next Gen movies, both Generations and First Contact, sadly, she has died at the age of 70. We're used to talking about how few actors are left from the original series, but now, of course, we're losing folks from Next Generation. And, you know, time marches on, but we'll be noting these things more often, sadly, because it's a reminder to me that Next Gen debuted like 35 years ago, which makes me feel kind of old to say that. So we're going to be honoring people as they leave this life because of their contributions to Star Trek. And a brighter note, San Diego Comic-Con wrapped up a few weeks ago, and while there isn't space to talk about everything that happened there, some of the highlights are that have come out is that in the next season of Strange New Worlds, which of course serves as a bit of a prequel series to the original series, they have added Scotty to the cast, played by an actual Scotsman by the name of Martin Quinn. And we're also going to be seeing the beginnings of the relationship between Roger Corby and Christine Chapel. In this case, Corby will be played by Cillian O'Sullivan. And if you recall, Chapel finds out what happened to him on the episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of? So we see how it ends, which isn't good. But now we'll see how it begins. And it'll be interesting to see how they weave that story. We also saw a preview of the Section 31 movie that stars Michelle Yeoh, who, even though she won an Oscar, wanted to come back and be in Star Trek again. And I think that's pretty cool. Lower Decks will premiere its, sadly, last season later this year. And if you haven't watched Prodigy on Netflix yet, please do. I haven't watched all the episodes yet, but if you want to watch some good Star Trek, even though it's for kids, air quotes, I highly recommend it. In episodes 9 and 10, we even see a shout-out to the original series, and I won't spoil what that was, but it was pretty cool. So, those are my highlights, and Dan, I hope you and I get to experience San Diego Comic-Con someday, because there's just a lot of cool stuff out there.
Yeah, we should put that on our bucket list, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, that or Star Trek Las Vegas. That looks like another cool convention to go to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so that's all for news. Now we're going to move on to the episode at hand. In this case, it's The Menagerie, Part 1. This and the following episode, Part 2, were created because the production team had run out of scripts and were in danger of not being able to deliver new episodes on time to NBC. Most pilots serve as introductions to the show, but since this pilot was so different, It was not used initially to intro the show. That was left to Where No Man Has Gone Before. One of the main reasons why the cast changed so much was that, according to who you might believe, it was either Jeffrey Hunter's wife. She either made too many demands in time and money, so when NBC gave him another shot at it, they cast William Shatner instead, which actually turned out to be a big break for Star Trek, as Hunter died in 1969 due to a freak accident. Now, I don't think Star Trek would have become what it became if its main star had died the same year the show ended. And since they couldn't straight up use the first pilot, they wrote a framework that would use the footage from the pilot to give them a couple of episodes to give them time to catch up to produce more episodes. According to IMDb.com, it was Bob Justman who came up with the idea. The framework was originally written by John D.F. Black, but then Roddenberry rewrote so much of it that he got sole credit, much to Black's chagrin. He even went as far as filing a grievance with the Writers Guild, but was turned down. I'm thinking Black probably didn't like Roddenberry very much, as this was the second time I've read about this happening. The script took 4 days to write, and they got 2 episodes out of it. One time, I watched both episodes with the written commentary by Mike and Denise Okuda, and they said that this literally saved the show. So, oh, and if you're a fan of Strange New Worlds, this wasn't the first time Spock stole the Enterprise. So it goes to show that he had experience taking the ship. This episode was its conclusion were the first to be released on home video way back in 1980, first on Betamax and then VHS, and then a video disc release in 1981, and on Laserdisc in 1984. Dan, do you remember those two big disc players that they had?
Like, yeah, and I have to make a confession, Kevin. I actually saved a Laserdisc from recycling within the last, couple years. So I actually have one that I'm holding on till doomsday. But yeah, I've got one of my other nerd niches. I like a cartoon called Regular Show. And they had an episode called The Format Wars, which and then a follow up cartoon. It is worth a watch. Yeah,
I'll have to look that up. I love Regular Show.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
So the video disc, that's the thing where you would put it in and close the lid, and you'd have to flip it over halfway through, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, when I worked at Radio Shack circa 1989 to 1992. We had them in our stores, and I remember one guy saying, you gotta, you know, flip these things over. How do you work them? And there were two types, just like the old school CD players you'd have in pre-Pentium class computers, where you had ones where you just put the disk in, but you also had ones where you had this whole separate cartridge that you took out and opened up and then put the disk in and closed it. So there, wow, there were different standards, but yeah, it was good stuff for that time.
Yeah. And the LaserDisc, it looks like a giant DVD, like an album size DVD, right? That's what that was.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
All right. So good to reminisce. All right. So our two prominent guest stars in the episode are Malachi Throne and Sean Kinney, who stands in as an injured Pike. Now, Throne and Leonard Nimoy have a shared history with Star Trek, as they were both in the original pilot, The Cage. Throne was the original voice of the Keeper, which was changed when the footage was used for this episode. And he and Nimoy starred in the last time Nimoy played Spock on TV, in the two-part Next Generation episodes Unification, where Throne played Romulan Senator Pardek. And in looking over his body of work, he did a lot of voice work during his life, which makes a lot of sense because he had a really cool voice. And of course, he died in 2013. Sean Kinney sits in for Jeffrey Hunter. And the reason why they made him the victim of an unfortunate accident was that, of course, to hide the fact that his voice and Jeffrey Hunter's were not the same. According to IMDb.com, they had to tone down the whiteness of his hair because it was too bright for the cameras. It also took 5 hours to apply the makeup to play the injured Pike. Now, Kinney later played DePaul in two other episodes of the original series, Arena and A Taste of Armageddon. So we get to see what he actually looked like during the original series. Roddenberry did this to thank him for doing the job of an injured Pike, where all he got to do was sit there and stare into space. He retired from acting in 1980 and works as a professional photographer. He wrote a book about his experiences on Star Trek in 2012 called Captain Pike Found Alive! And you can find it on Amazon if you're interested in reading it. Now, years ago, when they started remastering episodes, they did a theater release of both parts of this episode, and I regret to this day that I didn't go and see it. It would be cool to watch all of this on the big screen at one time. And what I like about these episodes is that it gives the viewer a sense of history behind the Enterprise and the people who served there. Pike's adventures are now being played out with the show Strange New Worlds. And in the first season of that show, and in the second season of Discovery, we find out that Pike learns his fate and tries to change history, but discovers that he can't. So what we're seeing on Strange New Worlds is what he does with that knowledge in the meantime. Dan, tell us your thoughts on this episode.
Oh, it's a good, first of two parts. And I was thinking about that a few hours ago when we're prepping for the podcast. Like, I for those that don't know, I work in the field of IT, information technology, computer nerds. And it seems like it's pretty easy to steal a starship, and whether it's a Star Trek movie or original series episode. And I've been thinking about some of the security flaws of stealing a starship, but it
rubs up against your IT security heart, I guess, huh?
Yes. Like, you should not. Before you build a starship, you think you should be able to, not simply record someone's voice or imitate them and then take over the starship. But uh-huh. Hey, it was a simpler time when they
had this series.
So
yeah. Yep. Oh yeah, and of course, they had nowhere near the kind of technology stuff that we have now. So it's like they were making an educated guess,
Yeah, I mean, so many things of modern technology are predicted from that time when these episodes were made, but they couldn't think of everything. Mm-hmm. Security, computer security, yeah. Was probably not on their mind before the original internet and ARPANET were created. So
yep. Yeah. All right. The Menagerie Part 1 debuted on November 17th, 1966, and this episode was directed by Mark Daniels. This was his fourth time in the director's chair, out of a total of 14 that he directed, which tied him with the most with Joseph Pevney. And while he also directed The Envelope in Part 2, they gave the directing credit to Robert Butler because most of the cage was used in that episode. So when we watch part two, we're watching mostly the cage. As mentioned before, this was originally written by John D.F. Black and heavily rewritten by Gene Roddenberry. I want to remind everybody that my sources of information for this are mostly from IMDb.com, Inside Star Trek by Herb Solow and Bob Justman, the serialized stories written by the late James Blish, and of course, just stuff I've picked up over the years watching these episodes over and over again. The opinions expressed by Dan and myself are in no way influenced by CBS, Viacom, Paramount, Paramount Plus, or any of their subsidiaries. We are watching the remastered episodes on Paramount Plus, and if you have the original DVDs with the original effects on them, this should work as well. So, without any further ado, hit play in 3, 2, 1. I'll say this again, they did an excellent job remastering the planets.
Yeah, that is a nice yeah. planet.
So the matte painting used here shows cranes in the background that give us the idea that maybe they built starship parts here. And it's been noted that the wall that they're standing in front of is later used in A Taste of Armageddon, Wolf in the Fold, Plato's Stepchildren, and Wink of an Eye. The round part was used as the Council Dais, that thing right there, in Mirror, Mirror. Oh, and the lady talking, her name is Julie Parrish, who later in life worked as a staff counselor in a battered woman's shelter. Sadly, she died in 2003. And there he is, Malachi Throne. Now watch as they walk out the door. I like that old school picture of Jupiter right there. Now that little line right there has been slightly retconned by Strange New Worlds as a Lieutenant Kirk has been on the Enterprise a few times during season 2. Now, this is the first of two times we see a hinged door in Starfleet. The other was during the episode that debuted after the Menagerie Part 2 court-martial. Now, I wonder if Sean Kenny could control that thing. Now, could he control it out of sight, or did the stage manager do this?
Oh, it looks pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
He's been involved with the institution of marriage, Kevin. It's just you might have to strike that from the record.
Bad, Dan. Bad. Oh, there you go. The beeps.
We just lost some viewers.
Uh-huh. You imagine that your sole acting job is just to sit still and stare?
As I previously mentioned.
Oh, so those of you all listening, Dan has a low opinion on the institution of marriage.
Oh, well.
So do you think people seeing this for the first time were like shocked by Spock's, what Spock is saying?
He does seem fairly emotional for a half Vulcan.
Yeah. So in watching this and thinking about the level of medical technology we have now in 2024, and you know, this is supposed to be 200 years from now. And it makes me wonder, when we get to the time showcased in Star Trek, will we have the technology to get a person who's injured in this way out of a decaying body? You know what I mean?
Yeah, something to think about, what medical technology would be like. You know, yeah. In the beginning of this podcast, I'd mentioned our cat. And yes. The doctor at the veterinarian clinic, they sent home a small laser. And so we applied laser treatments every day. For pain and also cell growth and healing. So I almost feel like I live in a Star Trek universe.
That's cool. Nice remastered shot right here.
Yeah.
Now, you'll notice one of the little screens that's used in the cage is on Mendez's desk there. And we'll see that again in court-martial. Foreshadow.
I wonder if those are the same data sets that were used, you know, when they were
making the cage.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Also, the
Doomsday computer machine. Center you see here is a redress of the engineering set of the Enterprise. Now, when they pan back to the right there, you'll see that the forced perspective part of the set is blocked off by a blue wall. The extra computers here were later reused in A Taste of Armageddon and on Spock's shadow in the Immunity Syndrome. And of course, Chief Humboldt here is played by George Sawaya. I don't know how to pronounce that, who died in 2003. Sawaya.
But as a person who's a computer historian, I mean, the machines, the mainframes of that era. Oh, yeah. Neck pinch.
Gotta hear the pinch music. Yep. All right, go on.
Oh, I just think they're not a lot different than actual computers of that era. I mean, if you had to say, what does a future computer look like? That's that's exactly what you'd do.
Yeah. Defensive much, Captain? Smoothie.
I think Commander William Riker in the future was also similarly questioned by his current starship captain over his previous captain.
Yes, the Pegasus.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it sounds like when the gummy kicks in. Now, of course, it's later figured out that Scotty's third in command, but at this point in the series, they hadn't been established yet. So it should have been Scotty on the bridge instead of Hansen. Hansen is played by Hagen Biggs, who died in 2016. Now, the way Spock throws Humboldt around here reminds me when I was a kid and I'd throw my sister around when my brother and I were doing things and didn't want to be interrupted. Of course, I never slugged her like that, but and I do like how he collapses when he gets pinched. Dan, do you like that he did that with those little disc things?
Oh, yeah. It was 3.5-inch floppies. They're always still useful.
Now, it's been pointed out that Humboldt and the other named crew person were knocked out for exactly that long so Spock's cover wasn't blown. There are other instances when people have come out of the nerve pinch rather quickly, so it's been conjectured that maybe Spock can fix the pinch to make sure the pinchee stays out long enough to get away. Of course, in reality, it works long enough to make sure the plot keeps moving. Interesting how this is supposed to be in the future, yet this is a window to the past where people who were nonverbal couldn't speak. And of course, now people use eye movement to communicate using computers. And I think they've even figured out how to like tap into people's brainwaves or something, haven't they?
Yeah, they're getting there.
Yeah.
Do you remember the game Mahjong that used to be included in earlier versions of Windows? Yes. Mm-hmm. That was programmed by a person who was mostly paralyzed and used one of those touch sticks and held in his mouth.
Wow.
He programmed the core of that game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a crazy story.
Mm-hmm. I like how this is common thinking about Vulcans, but how many times have we seen Spock do just that, especially in Wrath of Khan and Undiscovered Country?
And if you can do it on the best Star Trek movie ever made, I mean, where can't you do it?
Right.
Zing.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how when Roddenberry created Next Generation, he wanted no conflict among the crew. But yet you watch these old episodes and these guys were arguing all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's why it made the original series a little better.
Well, Spock's half Vulcan. Does that mean he can run off half cocked?
Maybe. Bitter boomch.
I like those chairs. I want one for my office.
Yeah. So they're opening a top secret file with a yeoman in the room? How does that work?
They're in space Mar-a-Lago. That's the only answer.
Well, good thing they didn't find it in the bathroom then, huh?
Yeah, exactly. That's, I had that note all ready to go right before the recording.
It's been too long, hasn't it, Dan?
It has too much buildup.
Okay, so one of two things happened. Either Spock snuck in and pulled him out, or they just beamed him out. There she goes. Now, this clip here is reused from the Corbomite maneuver of them standing in the hall. Surprise! So what do you think, Dan? Do you think he was flipping a switch where they couldn't see his hands move?
That's a good question. It looks like the guy from McHale's Navy.
Huh. I don't know if he was in that.
I mean, vaguely, it's not him, but Ernest Borgnine. Yeah.
Oh, no, that is not Ernest Borgnine. Now, of course, here in the original edit, they simply reuse footage of the shuttle Galileo. Here, you see it says Starbase 11 on the front, and the name of the shuttle is the Picasso.
A question I have, Kevin, is weren't they going at warp drive, warp speed up, and it go warp speed, or does that all make sense?
You know, that's a very good question, and something you see later, they talk about fuel, and we see that in the episode of Galileo 7. So clearly, whatever powers these things has some kind of limit to it. So would it be able to go to warp speed? I don't know. That's a good question.
But then we get in the whole thing about the physics of outer space. Once you get to a certain speed, it's not like you're pushing against waves in a ship. You'll maintain that speed, right, unless otherwise. Right. Interfered with. But this is science fiction.
But these are good questions to ask, I think.
Mm-hmm. concern
that one guy that foils the plot. I don't know why, but I always like the way he says that, even as if he knows they're screwed, but says it anyway. And like you said, Dan, earlier, there's no gravity in space, so they could fly like that forever.
Right, right.
Well, there's your problem. Yeah.
That you might need, your oxygen.
Yeah. So your ship runs out of power. I guess it would also run out of a way to generate oxygen. He's a wacky Vulcan.
There are a lot of good shots in this episode where they close in on Kirk's face. And he turns and gets a good yearbook shot.
Yep.
Is this the first mention of a Trek original series, Evan?
You know, that's a good question. I have not come across anything that points out if it was the first one or not. But judging from what we have watched, I think it might be.
One win for me.
Say that again. Oh, there you go. You know, when I was a kid, I used to watch Fat Albert, and they would watch their favorite hero, the Brown Hornet. And there was an episode where the ship was caught in a tractor beam, and the beam was in the shape of a tractor. I always thought that was funny.
Yeah.
So you notice the tan belts on the security officers. This is the last time we see them. I guess McCoy's not used to giving orders to security people.
He's just a doctor, Kevin, not a law enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm. He's an old country doctor.
He was hoping to have a mint julep, and I had to administer the law.
Then next thing you know, he's in command of the damn ship.
Yeah.
Does that remind you of sitting in front of your computer watching people doing things, Dan?
Yeah, I've been there. Oh, there'll be more painful moments, Kirk.
Oh, yes. Kirk. We know them all too well. I hate it when that happens. This is the first time we see the belt used to begin a court session in Star Trek. According to IMDb.com, the idea came up when they were filming the episode Court Martial and was used a few more times in the original series, and we saw it again in Next Gen and in Deep Space Nine. You also notice Scotty doesn't have a dress uniform. That doesn't appear until Space Seed.
This reminds me of the TV show Arrested Development. That's fancy. I like Kirk's uniform.
Yeah, they look sharp, don't they?
Mm-hmm. I wonder where all those little triangles in that position. I'm not sure what that signifies.
I'm not sure either. And now we get to see the footage from the cage. The cage was shown during Trek conventions in the 70s and wasn't made available until 1986 using black and white footage spliced with the color footage due to how it was edited for this episode. It was also hosted by Gene Roddenberry while he was standing on the engineering set of Next Generation. Now, they found all the color footage and broadcast it as a whole for the first time in 1988. And I wonder what audiences thought of seeing this back in 1966. I also wonder what Jeffrey Hunter thought of this being put on television back then.
It was Cormite maneuvered.
Uh-huh. In more ways than one. So, sadly, none of the main cast, for the exception of one of the keepers from the cage, is no longer alive. That is kind of a bummer. Oh, it's noted how Majel Barrett was in this, and you hear Majel Barrett's voice in the updated Enterprise, so she's kind of in two places at once. Now, it's interesting to watch this and see how the Enterprise looks now in Strange New Worlds. Now, I know the purists out there wanted the Enterprise like look like it did here, but given budgets and high-definition television, I don't think that'd be possible.
I like those little goose, I don't know what you call them, those little gooseneck viewfinders that they have on their consoles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And now we get to experience what I like to call excitable Spock.
And if our plot demands it.
Apparently, in the early days on the Enterprise, the crew were allowed to wear tennis outfits when they were off duty. You know, I never understood why they had such a long close-up on the communicator. Whoa. Beyond the fact that they wanted to show it off. Yeah. Say that again. And I also do like the swanky TV set he's got in his quarters. Another update on the remastered version of this, you see the stars going by Pike's window. Oh, and this is actor John Hoyt, who plays Dr. Boyce. He looks like an old man here, but he was only in his early 60s at that point. I later knew him as the grandpa on the show Gimme a Break. He died in 1991 at the tender age of 81.
Oh, mint julep, here it comes.
There you go. Man, I wish I had a doctor like that and just hand me a martini.
Right?
How about that? Now, but would a bartender help you, say, with a colonoscopy or something?
Is that covered by your HMO?
Yeah, exactly.
That's an out-of-network drink.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're talking about Rigel 7. We revisit Rigel 7 in Season 2 of Strange New Worlds. Now, apparently, they didn't need as many crew people as in the past. Later, Kirk would talk about there were 400 on the Enterprise. Now, it's funny, when Strange New World started, we saw Pike riding a horse in the wilderness somewhere. Bit of foreshadowing here is that these are the places the Talusians pick from his brain, including the, quote, green animal women.
Well, let's not bicker and argue about who killed who. It's a happy occasion.
Uh-huh. Bartender. Very philosophical.
Better get busy living or get busy dying.
Uh-huh. Although no one's digging a tunnel to get out of the Enterprise, though.
It's a Sony Watchman.
So I guess when they refit the Enterprise, they took away the printers.
Man, I wonder how hard it is to get a toner cartridge on a starship.
Especially when you're in deep space, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, shake it, put it back in to get the Starbase.
Damn it, Canet did it again. And yet they're sitting around watching something on a big screen. A little touch of irony, am I right?
Gentlemen, you are experiencing Technicolor and Dolby surround sound.
Surprised they didn't grab any popcorn.
Yeah. Dun dun dun. You know, you think you can make a matrix display with be able to put out letters and things like that? If you can put in mm-hmm. one LED or LCD. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is Scotty looking at there?
Hmm. Hit the brakes.
Ah! Now, did you notice the bandage on the guy who walked in there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So the guy talking there forgot to mention that that is actor Peter Duryea, who died in 2013. And of course, as I mentioned before, Major Barrett, who died in 2008. I'm glad we're getting to know number one in Strange New Worlds. I gotta say, I do like the landing party jackets. They look pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And in the original pilot, you see the transporter controls there. They reuse the helm and nav console for that. So mm-hmm. they're reusing the same thing for in two different places.
I like the bell-bottom jackets.
Mm-hmm.
A little flare at the wrist.
I mean, they do look cool, don't they?
Yeah. Looks like Devo.
I'm glad they found a better sound for the transporter.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, the backdrop you see there was later reused in Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Look at that guy, brought his luggage for 3 days in the upper left.
Mm-hmm.
He's ready to camp out.
Maybe he thought he was going on a camping trip or something. Now, you notice Spock is walking with a limp, which is a holdover from the Rigel incident.
Can you refresh our memories, Kevin, on the type of phaser pistol that they are carrying there?
Did they call it a phaser or a phase pistol? I'm not exactly sure, but you see it here, and then you see it again.
Is it type one or whatever?
I don't remember. Yeah.
The old quivering blue leaves. Look at that.
Oh, yep. And then we got excitable Spock that smiles. Yes, the Salt Vampire episode, the guy who lived on the planet had that same kind of phaser pistol. So which tells you he was there for a while, but didn't have updated stuff.
It's a town of Bristol.
Now, the actor on the left, his name is Leonard Muddy, M-U-D-I-E. He has the distinction of being the first Trek actor to die, as he died in 1965. He was also one of a handful of Trek actors born in the 19th century. Now, the actor on the right was John Lorimer, who appeared in two regular season episodes, and his character died in both. This is his first appearance in Trek, and he died, the actor, in 1986. And there, of course, is Susan Oliver. She died in 1990, but she left quite a mark. She was afraid of flying, so to get over it, she earned her pilot's license. She also was the first of the original 19 women who got admitted to AFI's directing workshop and directed a couple episodes of MASH. So not only was she an actor, but she was a true trailblazer.
Pike has just decided to re-enlist.
He's going to sign up for another tour.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, of those three aliens, the one that was standing on the right was played by Meg Wiley, and she is the lone surviving cast member of this episode. And, of course, the person standing... let me back up. Meg Wiley was the one standing at their beginning. The one that was on the left, her name is Sandra Lee Gimple, and she's the only living cast member left from the cage. What every guy wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see the green thing sitting there on the table apparently is just a plain old Stanley thermos. I guess they still make them in the 23rd century.
Here, try our Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I feel like there's a comment to be made there, but I think I'd get in trouble if I made it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Let's go off and see the secret.
Uh-huh.
Anytime you see a diagonal rock like that on a rock face, you're, you know,
something funny's going on.
Gonna have bad karma. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a person, you never know.
Maybe it's a Gorn, maybe it's Maybelline, who knows? Now, I'm curious, while Kirk's crew was watching this, did they hear the music, too?
That's a question. It's a meta question.
Uh-huh.
Quick, shoot with your phaser.
Uh-huh. Do you think you and I, Dan, will live to see a day of energy weapons? Like, I mean, I guess there's tasers, but...
Yeah. Well, who knows?
Who knows? I wonder what Nimoy was thinking, seeing himself from a few years before.
He thought he got a slightly better haircut, I think.
Yeah. But if they're receiving a transmission when the whole crew have to be murdered?
Those legal loopholes. Oopsie.
Mm-hmm. And that's the name of a card game we used to play.
I was reading that. In this, you know, what are they talking about?
Somebody might ask me that after a first week of school, just to let everyone know I got a job as a sixth grade teacher.
The proverbial hanger.
Mm-hmm. I do like the symmetry of how this ends and then how part two ends. It all ends with Kirk being in the courtroom all by himself.
I like that where they give the old fashioned concluded next week.
Whew. Yeah, pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
All right. My closing thoughts here is that I admire how the makers of Star Trek were given a problem and they found a creative way to get around it, as well as finding a way to keep the show on the air with new episodes. Now, of course, in our modern era, most have the time and the money to solve problems like this, and I can't help but wonder if we've lost some creative edge as a result. And part of another Star Trek podcast I listened to, and they were talking about episodes of Strange New Worlds and how everything is just 10 episodes and how much of a drag that is, because like the show is so good. I wish there were more episodes. I wish the seasons were longer, and I wish it didn't take like, you know, 2 years between seasons. But of course in the old days, they would churn these things out week after week after week. The performances and the music used in part one to create an excellent atmosphere, and always, even now, want to leave me wanting to watch part two to see how it ends. Dan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I had watched The Menagerie before several times, but I never knew until studying the episode for this podcast and reading your notes and looking into it further about, you know, how this came to be out of the recycled pilot. And it is. Sort of, you know, a very creative use of existing footage, and yeah, I liked it. I'm ready to tech part two already.
I know. I almost wish we were doing it now, but of course, I don't have notes to work on. But so, I'm gonna do this in my best Batman announcer voice to preview part two. Will Spock be convicted? Will Pike find some way to have a normal life? Will Kirk ever trust Spock again? Will every crew person aboard be murdered by order of Starfleet? Tune in a few weeks to find out the thrilling conclusion. Same bat time, same bat channel. How was that?
That was great. We'll see everybody back then.
Excellent. All right. So, credits. We've been recording this on Discord, and my son Henry DeBeck is serving as engineer. And this is edited using the free version of Audacity software. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.